Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Matthew Sutton, who's a professor of history at Washington State University and a research fellow at the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation. His first book, Amy Semple McPherson and the Resurrection of Christian America, won the Thomas J. Wilson Memorial Prize from Harvard University Press. His new book, American Evangelicals and the Politics of Apocalypse, examines the relationships amongst American evangelicalism, apocalyptic thought, and political activism during times of national crisis and war. Welcome to Background Briefing, Matthew.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And you had a piece in, I believe it was Monday's New York Times, Why the Antichrist Matters in Politics. And that preceded the President of the United States being called an Antichrist to his face at a fundraiser here in Los Angeles, did it not?
It did. It was great timing. I had a number of friends email me on Monday night asking me if I had paid the heckler to bring attention to my story.
Well, I believe you've been talking to Michael Medved and some other people have been interviewing you, accusing that person of being a plant, right?
Yeah, that's how the story has evolved. It didn't start off that way, and then I was a little bit surprised when Michael Medved brought that up, and he didn't accuse me of being part of this conspiracy, but he believed that the Obama administration saw an opportunity and they took it, and then since then this has gone haywire, and I just saw on, I believe it was Rush Limbaugh's website, he actually created a scenario in which he says how to sort of discredit the right, which is start with the New York Times editorial, go on MSNBC to discredit the president, and then position a heckler that essentially I'm now part of this vast left-wing conspiracy to discredit the right.
Well, you apparently played a role by laying the tracks here with the New York Times. Wasn't that what Limbaugh was suggesting?
Exactly, yeah. For an op-ed I submitted about a month ago and have been working on with the editors, it was amazing timing to suddenly get swept up in all of this.
But you've been clearly working on this subject for some time.
I am, yeah. And the book you mentioned at the end, my Amy Semple McPherson book is out, but the book I'm working on now probably won't be out for another year, but it studies the history of fundamentalist Christian apocalyptic thought and its relationship to politics. But as I saw Michelle Bachmann and especially Rick Perry surging in the polls, I realized that there's a lot of relevance in terms of what I'm seeing in the past and what's happening now.
And elaborate on that, if you will.
Sure. Well, for me, the issue started in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s, where fundamentalists become increasingly suspicious about the growth of the federal government, that Wilson expands the state, and then Franklin Roosevelt especially expands the state in the context of the economic crisis of the 1930s. And so fundamentalists begin to look at that and see what's happening, and it begins to trouble them because they have long read the Bible with the expectation that in the last days, at the end of time, the world would be governed by a supreme leader who they believe is the Antichrist. And so what they saw Roosevelt doing was positioning the United States to ultimately succumb to the Antichrist. And then throughout the 20th century, this idea has sort of ebbed and flowed, and it seems like the apocalyptic fervor is once again growing in the context of the Obama presidency and now the campaign.
And how does this tie in with other touchstones of the religious right, such as creationism, the anti-science movement, prayer in school, etc.? My understanding would be based upon the book sales of Tim LaHaye's series, The End Times, which are fairly substantial. So
yeah,
do you have any numbers of how many Americans believe, you know, because I've seen polls indicating how many people in this country, I think it's grown to over 40%, that don't think evolution is correct and believe the Earth is 6,000 years old. What percentage do you think believe in the rapture and Armageddon?
You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but Pew did research in 2003 or 2004, and so it's beginning to get a little bit out of date, that showed surprisingly high percentages of Americans who believe that Jesus might return during their lifetime and that with that it comes the rapture and this battle of Armageddon. So it's, you know, it's not a majority of Americans by any means, but it's a substantial minority and a substantial component within the religious right who at least have that theology. But then again, it's another jump to go from that theology to the kind of fervent anti-statism that's driving in part the Bachmann and Perry campaigns.
So in terms of the Antichrist, President Obama was accused of being the other night by this interloper who had to pay it's $35,000 a couple. So that was an expensive statement. But walk us through this kind of, I would almost describe it as kind of pornographic theology, because so much of the end times fascination is with pools of blood, lakes of blood. And the notion is that we non-believers, our life has to end in burning flesh for their lives to begin. It's not a very good deal for most people. And, you know, it's so violent. It doesn't seem to have a lot to do with my understanding of who the prophet Jesus was. But that aside, what's the countdown here? I mean, let's start with the Antichrist, because he's the one who fools us all before the rapture. Isn't that right?
Well, sort of they happen simultaneously, that the world is going to descend into chaos. And this is where we get tied back to the issue of the family values, the culture war, abortion, homosexuality, these kinds of other touchstone issues. A certain segment of evangelical Christians would see the rise of these kind of moral issues as signs that they're living in the last days, signs of the degeneracy of the nation. And then what they expect is that as things move towards the end of time, what's going to happen is that power is going to be consolidated in fewer and fewer places through central government and then ultimately through a one-world organization, which is also why they're very suspicious of the United Nations. And then at that point, Jesus is going to rapture the true saints to heaven in the midst of chaos, in the midst of wars, and then the Antichrist is going to emerge as both a religious and a political leader who's going to offer peace and stability. And so then for the next 3.5 years, people are going to support the Antichrist and things will be okay, and then the Antichrist is going to turn and suddenly reveal that he is in fact the Antichrist, and things are going to get horrific. There's going to be great wars that are then going to culminate in the Battle of Armageddon, which will be literally in the Middle East. But back to your earlier point on kind of the horrific violence, that there is a part of that. But most of the mainstream stuff is much more mild. I mean, this kind of theology was typical of Billy Sunday. I explored a lot in my book on Amy Semple McPherson, and it's part of Billy Graham's career. I mean, almost every one of his crusades, he preached a sermon on the Second Coming. And we certainly don't think of him as promoting pornographic violence, and yet this is the theology that undergirded his view of the end times.
Well, but how was it different, for example, than Ahmadinejad's version of the end times? There's a real similarity, is there not, in the 12th is in Shiism? I mean, he talks about it all the time.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities, and you know, since the detonation of the atomic bomb and the development of atomic weapons, I mean, there's been lots of apocalyptic scenarios, both secular, Christian, Muslim. I mean, we can find these kinds of scenarios in a lot of different traditions.
Uh-huh. So, Matthew Sutton, again, professor of history at Washington State University, the author of Amy Semple McPherson and The Resurrection of Christian America, and a forthcoming book, American Evangelicals and the Politics of Apocalypse. He had an article in Monday's New York Times, Why the Antichrist Matters in Politics, and we're talking about the interpretations of the, I guess, Book of Revelation mostly, and how it translates into American politics. Just in terms, though, of how this year is shaping up, we've had Michelle Bachmann, we've had Rick Perry. I mean, Rick Perry began his political campaign, you know, just on the eve of his announcement, with what was, for all intents and purposes, a religious rally. Right. Now, I think a lot of what he was doing down in Houston was, in many ways, signaling to the faithful that he was that he's not the Mormon candidate. I think that there was a part of that. But has it actually come up at the end of times? Because you would think, as a job description for President of the United States, you are the Commander-in-Chief, therefore you are the custodian of the nuclear button. And at your fingertip, you have thousands of nuclear weapons capable of wiping out the world. If you believe the world is going to end in fire and you have access to the nuclear button, I would argue that that's a conflict of interest.
Sure. Yeah, well, one of the nice things, at least in terms of helping us sleep at night, is to know that most of the folks who believe this, sort of, they have a mixed message. It's a paradox. For them, they believe that Jesus could return at any moment, and so they want to be prepared. But they also believe that he may not return for another generation or two, and so they need to live faithful Christian lives. They need to be good stewards of what God has given them, and they need to do the best they can with the tools they have. And so, so they're not going to do anything to hurry up Armageddon or to speed it up. And we can see this, I mean, the best place to see this is in the Reagan presidency. I have a mentor who continually reminds me that Reagan, more than any actual president, elected president, believed in this kind of apocalyptic theology. He was fascinated with it, and he made comments about it all the time. And yet he was also the one who worked to bring down, you know, the wall in Germany and to end the Cold War.
Which is no small achievement in terms of removing, what, 30, 40 years of people living within 30 minutes of extinction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so again, he was able to walk this fine line and sort of have it both ways.
So, Matthew Sutton, still, though, there is some traction in this belief system, given how popular the book sales, et cetera, have been. And
sure.
One would think then that it might come up. I mean, you're suggesting in your article in the New York Times that to some extent Barack Obama is tailor-made as the Antichrist. A lot of the talk about him being foreign-born and the suspicion about him and even the Nobel Prize apparently makes him a candidate. Explain to us how he could be seen as the Antichrist.
Right, and again, I think there's probably, it's a very, and I say this in the article, there's very few people who would actually see him as the Antichrist, but lots of people who would see him as sort of a tool of the devil to set up the nation for the eventual rule of the Antichrist. And theologically, there's a lot of problems with him as the Antichrist himself, most of which is that he's not been born in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe. But nevertheless, his personality traits, his charisma, his global reach, his ability to reconcile competing religious traditions, to go and speak to Muslim nations in a way that no American president has been able to before, to reach out to Africa, that he's somebody who just embodies these kinds of ideas, these kind of expectations about what the Antichrist will do. And so the fear or the concern is that he is just setting up the United States for what's going to come next, and that to stop him is to at least get the United States out of that cycle, into so that when God ultimately comes and judges nations, the U.S. will be seen more favorably than other nations that succumb to the power of the Antichrist.
But in the real world of politics, it's hard to reconcile the trigger of world government, because the U.N. is so ineffectual,
sure,
and world government is such a chimera. That part of it I find extraordinary. Maybe it's this country has a streak of Manichaeanism in it, in the sense that as soon as the Soviets went away, we had all of those people wearing military fatigues out in the woods with guns,
right,
waiting for the UN helicopters to plant chips in their backsides, you know. So there is something about the need for an enemy. But I'm puzzled. I didn't realize that the rapture comes at the time of the Antichrist. It's not the very last thing before the world is destroyed. I thought that was the idea, that we all end up in a lake of fire and burning flesh, and they all go off to heaven and live happily ever after.
Yeah, it's the theologians debate it, but the most prominent system, the one that's laid out by Tim LaHaye in the Left Behind books and everything, is that the true saints are raptured, and then comes the tribulation, which is overseen by the Antichrist, and then comes this great battle of Armageddon, and then comes the return of Christ and the judgment of the living and the dead. And then at that point, the true believers experience paradise with Christ, and the damned then do burn in the lake of fire in hell.
So what happens to the Earth then? Do they go off to another planet? Because if you have Armageddon, and I think nuclear weapons will probably come into it, right?
Right.
It's not going to be a particularly habitable world. Because that was, I remember when James Watt became Secretary of the Interior, he was a rabid born again and made,
sure,
all of these strange speeches, some of which I still have on tape, about the end of the world. That was always considered a conflict of interest, that he's in charge of the environment and yet,
right,
has this kind of pornographic desire to see the world end. What's the prognosis for the planet after Armageddon?
Yeah, it's going to be, well, it will probably be destroyed initially and then restored, and so then Jesus will set up a new heavens and a new earth, and it will be more of a paradise. But I wanted to go back, if you don't mind, to an earlier statement with respect to the Bachman and Perry issue and how they relate back to this theology. And it's that my point in the New York Times piece and what I'm hoping to communicate is not that I think that they are intentionally feeding or fueling this, or that they necessarily believe all this, although they may well. I just don't know. I think they're both smart enough not to get into these kinds of discussions. But that their strident anti-statism and their criticism of Obama's international affairs and his interventions into the economy, that resonates with a group of people who already have these preconceived conservative Christian beliefs. And so what's happening there is that they're sort of mutually reinforcing ideas that politicians can distance themselves from, while at the same time drawing support from an electorate who believes these ideas.
Well, now, Matthew Sutton, does that in any way explain this hostility towards healthcare reform? You know, a lot of these politicians that you just mentioned are harping on it all the time, and one would think, having traveled the world and lived in other countries, I know that most of the world, the developed world, has free healthcare, and
right,
everybody likes it. It's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you like it? So it absolutely astounds me that there are people out there who are really angry about the idea that this president has actually tried to make healthcare more affordable and more accessible. How does that tie into this theology?
It ties in very directly. And to do this again, we can go back historically to the 30s and 40s. And one of the things that was interesting about in doing my book on Amy Semple McPherson, who of course was an LA phenomenon, was that she actually supported FDR and she supported the New Deal, but she was one of the very few. But most of the folks I've studied and the people who are going to be in the book I'm writing now they were very critical of health care. And, you know, Harry S. Truman proposed national health care in the late 40s, and the fundamentalists were writing over and over again in their magazines and their periodicals and in their sermons that they needed to oppose this because this was yet again additional growth of the federal government, additional growth of the state, and that growing power of the state means fewer and fewer individual liberties and fewer religious liberties, and that ultimately, again, this would set the stage for the rise of the Antichrist. So the concern in the 1940s is the same concern we see voiced today.
So many of, of these preachers end up falling from grace. We had Haggart recently and Jimmy Swaggart, who was he was a big end of times Bible basher, if I can use that term.
Sure.
Amy Semple McPherson, she had quite a spicy private life, I understand.
She did.
I recall, I think she had an affair with Milton Berle, among all.
Well, according to Milton Berle, probably not, but yeah. She did have an exciting, interesting private life.
With Hollywood celebrities? I'm sorry that we're going tabloid on you here at the end.
Oh, no, I can talk about Amy all day, but yeah, no, she probably had an affair and possibly staged a kidnapping, right, which was her most famous event, which got her into the headlines. But yeah, certainly your point is right. There have been a number of popular charismatic leaders who have fallen from grace, but there have been, you know, many that did not. Again, people like Billy Graham or now, you know, Rick Warren, and there are others whose characters tend to be much better, or at least much more popular than others.
Well, it certainly doesn't stop them from going after the president and calling him a child molester, or at least condoning child molestation, being a Muslim, being an imposter. The fact that some of the current evangelicals may not be hypocrites doesn't mean that they are casting the first stone.
Right. Well, I think the ones who are, you know, being that brutal with the president, I think, are a very, very small minority, similar to the guy in the Midwest who's protesting the soldiers' funerals over gay marriage. I mean, these are nuts on the fringe, but I think the vast majority of evangelicals are concerned about Obama's policies. I don't think, though, they go to those kinds of crazy extremes.
I see. So it's not I shouldn't merge this with the Tea Party. This is a separate.
Well, yes and no. I think there's resonance between the Tea Party's anti-statism in evangelicals' anti-statism. But like on the right, like on the left, like in the middle, there's a lot of nuance sort of among these giant demographics.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Matthew Sutton.
Thank you, Ian. It was fun.
Again, I've been speaking with Matthew Sutton, who's a professor of history at Washington State University and a research fellow at the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation. His first book, Amy Semple McPherson and the Resurrection of Christian America, won the Thomas J. Wilson Memorial Prize from Harvard University Press, and his new book is American Evangelicals and the Politics of Apocalypse, which examines the relationships among American evangelicalism, apocalyptic thought, and political activism during times of national crisis and war. So what do we learn on Background Briefing? Well, we began with Josh Rogan, who last week was at a round table with Bill Clinton, and he managed to get Bill Clinton to speak very frankly about what happened with the Middle East peace that Bill Clinton almost pulled off at the last minute with Barak and Arafat. As you recall, he came very close. And Bill Clinton was extremely frank in why that peace deal fell apart. And he blames Netanyahu. And he went on, I asked Josh Rogan to explain further what Clinton had said. He's written an article about this discussion he had with Clinton called Bill Clinton, Netanyahu Killed the Peace Process. Needless to say, it absolutely infuriated the Israelis, and they demanded an apology from the State Department and tried to suggest somehow that Hillary Clinton was responsible for her husband's remarks, and the State Department basically said, no, Bill Clinton's a private citizen. But it's pretty clear from Clinton's remarks where the blame really lies, and basically saying that, look, since we came that close, the Palestinians, even though Arafat rejected the deal, they've come around to accept the deal. But on the other hand, the Israelis have walked further and further away from the deal as Netanyahu and has taken them further to the right. And also Clinton argues that it's the settlers and the Russian emigres that have really changed the political nature of Israel. Then I talked with Doug Henwood, the editor of the Left Business Observer, about whether or not the people inside the tall towers on Wall Street are being shamed by the protesters outside. And he assured me that no such possibility, that they have probably look upon them as insects. And he had been down to the park where the protesters are gathering, and we were talking about whether this could build into a larger movement. And although he was pretty skeptical about that, he nevertheless feels that eventually people in this country are going to wake up. We actually talked a little bit about I told him about the apocalyptic interview we're having coming up, and I brought up Ahmadinejad's, that Al-Qaeda now is angry at Ahmadinejad for claiming that 9/11 was an inside job, and Henwood got off on a riff about that. Apparently he got fired from WBAI for questioning the truthers and the medical quacks taking over Pacifica. So he went on a tear about that. And then I talked to this interesting fellow who wrote the article in Monday's New York Times, Why the Antichrist Matters in Politics. And then that very evening, Monday evening, at a fundraiser out here in Los Angeles, President Obama was accused by a heckler of being the Antichrist. So I talked with Matthew Sutton about that. And he's writing a book, American Evangelicals and the Politics of Apocalypse. And he's also written about Amy Semple McPherson. So he really does know the stories of the influence and the weird theology of this movement, which he says is a serious and growing and scary movement. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.